ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ज्ञानेन यज्ञेन चाप्यन्ये यजन्तो माम् उपासते एकत्वे Translation. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second. One without a second. Here we go. As diverse in many and in the universal form. 9:15 Bhagavad Gita. Purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
This verse is the summary of the previous verses. The Lord tells Arjuna that those who are purely in Krishna consciousness and do not know anything other than Krishna are called Mahatma. Yet there are other persons who are not exactly in the position of Mahatma, but who worship Krishna also in different ways. Some of them have already been described as the distressed, the financially destitute, the inquisitive, and those who are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. But there are others who are still lower. And these are divided into three. One, he who worships himself as the Supreme Lord. Two, he who concocts some form of the Supreme Lord and worships that. And three, he who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarupa, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and worships that. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as the Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monists, are most prominent. Some people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality they worship themselves. This is also a type of God worship, for they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spirit soul. At least, such a sense is prominent. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. Second class includes the worshippers of the demigods, or those who, by imagination, consider any form to be the Supreme Lord. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worship that. The universe is also a form of the Lord. This verse is from chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita. The title of chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, is the most confidential knowledge. What is the most confidential knowledge? For that matter, what is confidential knowledge? And what is more confidential? And what is most confidential knowledge? Confidential knowledge is something that's very dear and personal and private. Supposing I have some confidential knowledge and I tell this nice devotee, it's confidential, don't tell anybody. That's one kind of confidential knowledge. But there's another kind of confidential. That which has to do with our real internal identity. That's confidential knowledge. The fact that The soul is the real self, is confidential knowledge disclosed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2. To clearly recognize the distinction between the body, deha, and the proprietor of the body, dehi, making that distinction, that's confidential knowledge. There's a certain class of people in this world that actually have that confidential knowledge. They have an understanding of the distinction between the soul and the body. Now, what's more confidential knowledge?
Mari.
More confidential is to understand the individual soul and the supreme soul are distinct. There are some persons that have an understanding of Brahman, but they don't make the distinction of Parabrahman and Brahman, or Atma and Paramatma. They don't make that distinction, so more confidential is that distinction is made clear in Bhagavad Gita. And now we're ready for the third question. The question is, what's the most confidential knowledge? The most confidential knowledge is, what's the relationship of love, an exchange of love between Atma and Paramatma, between Brahman and Parabrahman? That relationship of loving exchange between the two is the most confidential knowledge. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada has summarized that only the great souls, Mahatmas, take shelter of the internal potency of the Supreme Lord, engage in his devotional service, and through the medium of that devotional service, they understand this most confidential knowledge. Then Prabhupada brings it down one level and says, there are persons, they're not Mahatmas taking always shelter of the internal potency, but they have some material motivation. They want freedom from their suffering. They want economic betterment. They want curiosity satisfied. Or they want knowledge from the Supreme Lord. They come with something, with their hands extended, wanting something from the Supreme Lord. That's one step down. In this verse, Krishna is going down one more level. In this verse, Krishna is giving a very broad, liberal definition of others who he also considers to be his devotee. And there's an ascending order to how they're considered by Krishna. There's one that's higher, one that's in between, and one that's lower. We will start with the one that's lower and we'll go up. At the bottom of those who Krishna considers very liberally and very broad-mindedly to be his devotee, those who worship the Supreme as themselves, ekatvena. One time Srila Prabhupada described one very bold and foolish person who demonstrated this on stage. He had a big audience, and he was up on a big stage, and he sat down, took arti paraphernalia, rang a bell, and began worshiping himself. First incense, and then a ghee lamp, and he was literally worshiping himself, showing his audience, this is how you do it, ekatvena. Very silly, huh? Now, for those of us that are trained in Lord Chaitanya's teachings, that's very silly. And we understand that to be impersonalism. But here, Krishna is being very liberal, very broad-minded in saying, these persons, they're worshipping the soul as the supreme, and therefore that's above those that accept the body as the self. Now we'll go up one level from what the verse is describing, and that is pratakvena bahudha, or Worship of many. Bahu means many. Pratakthvena bahudha. Worship of demigods or many as God, many gods. Again, this is a very liberal statement made by Krishna, because there are other places in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says such worship is done by persons who are foolish. It's foolish because two things. The worship is actually meant for Krishna alone. Instead of worshiping Krishna alone, they're worshiping many, thinking many gods. There's a second reason that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita why it's considered foolish by him, and that's because they're desiring something very limited and temporary, and as a result of desiring something limited and temporary, they don't get shelter of the eternal. They miss the real purpose of the worship of Krishna. Now we'll go to the third level of, again, a very broad definition that Krishna is giving. Vishvato Mukham, those who are worshipping Vishvarup, the universal form. Krishna is saying, I accept them also as my devotee. Such persons cannot consider the Supreme Personality of Godhead beyond the gigantic material creation. For them, material nature and the manifestation of material nature is supreme. So, when Krishna is giving the most confidential knowledge, that is, what is the relationship between the Atma and the Paramatma, he's giving a very broad definition, and then he gives a very narrow definition also. In the broad definition, there's the understanding that every single soul is constitutionally part of Krishna and therefore is constitutionally serving Krishna. Constitutionally, we're servants of Krishna. Jivair Swarupaya Nitya Krishna Das. Some are serving Krishna this way, some are serving Krishna that way, but ultimately everyone is serving Krishna, and that's a very broad picture of who is Krishna's devotee. But there's a very high definition of pure devotional service, and that's really what devotional service is. It's pure. That very strict or very pure definition is just the previous verse. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dridhavrata namayantascha mam nityam nitya yukta upasate. They're always engaged in these wonderful activities of direct devotional service. That's the higher definition. Now I'll disclose to you why I chose to pick this verse to speak about this evening. As you probably know, I'm with a group of devotees. We're visiting places that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited when he left Jagannath Puri, heading on his South India tour. We visited the major temples where he visited. When we were visiting in Kurmakshetra or Kumarahata, Kurmakshetra, there was a television station from Tirupati who happened to be at Krishna, Kurmakshetra at the same time we were. Big movie camera, much bigger than this one. Guy with his microphone doing interviews of everybody. We were on your television station when we were at Kurmakshetra. Frankly, it was really nice because we had a wonderful kirtan. Devotee that was leading the kirtan, mridanga player, they were really making nice kirtan, and they got it all on film and let everybody, however many viewers there are on this television station here, wonderful sankirtan. There was another television station that came and wanted to have us interviewed, and he asked several questions and he thought his listening audience would be interested in. So one of the questions he asked was, religion in the West, religion in the East, what do you see to be major differences, if any? I gave him an answer that I thought his listening audience could hear, but now I'd like to give a different answer to all of you. You all know what is our pranam mantra to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namni Namaste Sarasate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paschacha Desatarine. In that second pranam mantra, we're offering namaha, our obeisances unto Srila Prabhupada, who is very kindly delivering the Western countries, which are filled with impersonalism and voidism. Have you ever wondered why the pranam mantra says the Western world that's filled with impersonalism and voidism, and why not the Eastern part of the world also? You ever thought of that question? I have. So my one answer to the difference between religion in the West and religion in the East is that the religion in the East, the varieties of impersonalism are far more distinct. And in the West, it's far more blurred. But impersonalism and impersonalism is shared by both. Impersonalism is the denial of the existence of God having form, qualities, name, activities. Denying that existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That exists both in the West and in the East. Derived from the Vedas, however, the distinctions, the particular doctrines or vadas that expose impersonalism are far more sharp and rigid and well-developed. In America, it's less developed, less rigid, a big blur of impersonalism. For example, this ekat vena, or ahangra upasana. You've heard of that term before? Ahangra upasana. Upasana means worship, and aham means myself. So worshiping myself. In America, they haven't figured that out yet. Not in such a distinct manner that someone sits on a stage and performs arti to himself. But it's a formal type of discipline that some teachers here in India are teaching their followers. Worship yourself and you become God. Huh. In this verse 9:15 Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is also giving other distinct forms of lesser versions of bhakti. But Krishna's, we don't find, for example, we don't find in the West demigod worship, except that which has been imported from India, and worship of the universal form, which is still found in India, but it's not found in the West. More distinct versions of lesser forms of bhakti, or otherwise forms of impersonalism. Here's one more major distinction between religion in the West and religion in the East. And that is, here in the East, there's an actual understanding of pure devotional service. That doesn't exist in the West. Shuddha bhakti, or paramaguyam, devotional service that is meant exclusively for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with anyabhilashata shunyam, jnana karma janavratam. There's not such an understanding in the West. A very deep personal position of pure devotional service, as is taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. We're visiting, you live here, but we're visiting here in Tirupati, where the presence of Ramanujacharya is very prominent through the centuries of the worship of Balaji at Tirupati. His teachings make the very same emphasis, that is, bhakti that's unmixed with jnana or karma. This is the standard of pure devotional service. I can tell you, there isn't a conception of that in the West. There's some lip service given to love of God, But what that actually means, there's not a clue. I'm not stating that there are persons there have no sincerity. That's not true. They're very sincere persons practicing whatever is the best that they have available to them. However, pure devotional service is a knowledge that's descending from the spiritual realm, and one requires the mercy of a Vaishnava to receive that understanding. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada envisioned placing this transcendental knowledge of pure devotional service in a written form, having them printed in mass quantity and distributed widely all over the world, so that this transcendental knowledge could be received by everyone, east or west. So we invite you all, if you don't have Bhagavad Gita in your home, when you go home, take Bhagavad Gita with you. Take this message of pure devotional service directly into your home. And if you have a copy, take it off your shelf, open the pages, and read the wonderful words of pure devotional service very carefully every day. And please come and visit the temple as often as you can. I've been here, each time I've been here, there's been nice assembly of devotees hearing Bhagavad Gita and discussing the topics together. The temple is here for that purpose. Please take advantage to come and hear Krishna's message in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So if anyone would like to ask questions, I'll take two or three questions and we see if we have some time. Yes? Who what? Yeah? Yeah? On the basic ground, what does that mean? They're at the lowest level.
Lowest level.
Yes. 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 No, on the lower level, this ekatvena, that which Krishna recognizes as worship intended for him, is their worship is beyond the body but on the platform of the soul, which you've explained or expressed correctly. Above that is those who are worship of the demigods. The merit that they have is, here's an individual who recognizes there's an authority above me who I'm accountable to, who I'm dependent upon. Rather than a gross materialist who doesn't think they're accountable or dependent upon anyone. They're just working very hard, trying to get ahead in life, and who cares who am I accountable to? So under the authority of the scripture, they're recognizing, I have someone who I'm answerable to and accountable to, and I'm respecting and worshiping them. It's less than worship of the Supreme Lord purely, but it's accepted by Krishna for that reason. Anything else? Okay. Yes? What do you think? You're right, yes. Yes.
Ante.
Anything else?
Inkya unda?
What's he asking?
What is the difference between Brahma related person and impersonalist?
I'm not sure I understand your question. You want to know what's the difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi? That's your question? Ah, that's your question. the four kumaras before they came to the gates of Vaikuntha, they were realized in Brahman. Shukadev Goswami, before he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, he was realized in Brahman. One who has factual realization of the Brahman feature of the Supreme, that's a Brahmavadi. But a Brahmavadi, as we see from the Kumaras and Shukadev Goswami, very quickly they can become Bhagavan Vadis by contact with Bhagavan or the mercy of the devotee of Bhagavan. Different is Mayavadi. Mayavadi is word jugglery, philosophized, putting God out of existence by saying he has no form, he has no qualities, he has no this, he has no that. No realization, just by speculation defining the Supreme as what the material realm is not. In the material realm, there's form. God must have no form. Neti neti. Na iti. Here there's personality. God must have no personality. Here there's qualities. God must have no qualities. Definition by negation. Born of frustration. That's impersonalism, Mayavadi. One more question. Last question.
In this sloka, Krishna considers these three types of devotees, those who worship Self as a Supreme and that two others.
Yeah.
So Krishna considers them as devotees, but will they get liberation?
No. Okay. Because what is required to get liberation? Prabhupada's simple explanation is if you want to enter into fire, you must become like fire. If you want to enter into the presence of the Supreme Pure, you must become supremely pure. So direct contact with the personality of God, it consciously in contact with the Supreme Lord, with the proper conception, is required. But it's the beginning stage. Very beginning stage. No liberation. So I'm going to excuse myself now. Not going to stay longer. We're going to see Balaji tomorrow, early morning. So please allow me to take my leave. And bless us that we have nice darshan tomorrow morning. Thank you.
His Holiness Ramapada Maharaj ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Gaur Premanand.